Today's Tensho will be on case 4 in the Mumonkan, the Gate of No Barrier. Case 4, the Western Barbarian with No Beard. Wakuan says, why has the Western Barbarian no beard? Mumon's comment. Study should be real study. Enlightenment should be real enlightenment. You should once meet this barbarian directly to be really intimate with him. But saying you are really intimate with him already divides you in two. Mumon's verse, don't discuss your dream before a fool. Barbarian with no beard obscures the clarity. This is day 2 of our sesshin. I want to say, our winter sesshin, but it's rather hard to believe that it's winter. I still find myself in the winter mode, you know. So I find myself clenching up as I go outside. Last night again, I was bracing for like the stinging cold, and I walked out, and it was a beautiful March. This feels like the spring sesshini. And I keep noticing this, even though it was 61 degrees just a few days ago, I keep feeling as though I will look out the window and see the snow piling up. It's like March here. So this is sort of the power of expectations, right? It's like, you know, we keep the temperature here in the Zendo around 65 degrees, something like that. And when it's, we've had sesshin here where it's been zero. 2 years ago, we had a sesshin and it was unbelievably cold. And sometimes I would come into the Zendo and everybody would have like, you know, hat, coat, blanket, you know. It's actually 65 in here, whether or not it's 0 degrees out there. But it's the psychology. It's like, oh my God, it's so cold. So, you know, just pile it on. And I myself felt colder somehow, even though the temperature, it's the expectation. So, this is day 2 of a sesshin, and it's a wonderful opportunity. I love the second day of sesshin, because this is where we begin to shed some of our expectations. Now, people come to sesshin with all kinds of agendas. And today, probably, you have just one agenda. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just surviving. Right? And this is so wonderful, I think, so purifying. We live lives of, and again, you know, this is not a criticism. So I'm not saying when you go home, you should throw your TV set away and so on. But if you think about it, by the way, I actually own a TV. You know, so you know, I'm not criticizing anybody's way of life. We all live very artificially. We all live very artificially. And we all are caught up in a kind of network of ideas and dreams and aspirations that are very false. You know, it occasionally happens to people that they suffer some kind of misfortune. A few years ago, my friend, Jun Fong Yu, who was at that time a chairman of the religion department, got a double whammy. She went to the doctor because of uterine cancer. And then they did a body scan and found she also had breast cancer. So this is like a death sentence, basically. And at that time, she underwent chemo. And I was going over to her house a couple times a week and sitting with her. And she would make these wonderful lunches. You know, I would go over from my office and we'd sit together at her house when she wasn't coming into campus. And she lives right in Highland Park. And she made these wonderful lunches, just excellent Chinese cooking. Things that I, bitter melon we had once, or winter melon. And we had winter melon, and we had a kind of a Chinese pumpkin, a white pumpkin, that was just delicious, stir-fried, and just these wonderful foods. And the atmosphere at her home was really wonderful because, you know, she was staring death in the face. And it was so clear that to her that life had taken on this great simplicity. And she actually said to me, you know, every day I just think this could be my last day. And, you know, this is, everything has become very precious to me. My dog, she has this one, has, I don't know if she still does, had this dog, Sam. And the amazing thing is that she didn't die. She went through chemo, and she had some surgical procedures also. And this was maybe 10 years ago, I think. And she's going strong. She's now at Columbia. She was hired by Columbia to set up a special Chinese Buddhism section in their religion department. But at the time, everything got... all the extraneous details got blown away. Suddenly, departmental politics just didn't look that interesting, you know? I have a friend of mine who's chair of my department. I'm trying to think how not to give him away, but I just did, so. If you're interested, you can look it up when you get home. But you know, he's in the middle of all of these academic politics, you know, and they're fascinating because people become very depressed over issues such as whether another person makes slightly more money than they do. So a person can get really depressed. You know, a person can get really depressed about the fact that I've published 3 books, she's published 2, and yet she's making more money. And people actually can't sleep at night, right, worrying about this. And life is so much like this, right? The extraordinary things that we seize on as terribly important, crucially important. If I don't get this raise, I just don't know what I'll do. And then you get something like a death sentence, and suddenly it's all very simple. It's all just the beautiful simplicity of not knowing that tomorrow may not be here. This is it. This is the only moment I'm certain of. And that simplicity is so precious. I know a number of people who are quite old, some of them are not very wise, but they're likable. And some of them, and that's why I hang with them, you know, because they're nice people. But they're, you know, not that wise, you know. We could go on about that. Well, I might. But some of them have this wonderful perspective because all the battles are over, right? And all the they know they're not going to be William Shakespeare, you know, and they're not going to be Jonas Salk. They're not going to be the next great scientific genius. And so it's all settled. Life is a settled business, right? And the future is absolutely certain. It's absolutely certain, right? It's going to end. Life is going to end. And so in that interval, they're so free, and life can be so wonderful because there's no longer anything to prove. And that simplicity, I think, is just priceless. It's just priceless. And it doesn't have to be the case that we wait until we're 80 or 75 to experience that simplicity. We can live our whole lives in that beautiful simplicity. And that's really what the Zen path, what the Sesshin in particular, is all about. You know, the future is, you know, we think, well, I myself think this way. I'm 53 years old. You know, the average age in the United States is, for a male, is 74. I've got, you know, 21 years. But actually, that's not a guarantee at all. Could be I go home from the Sesshin in a couple of days and you have an accident. That's not inconceivable, right? So the truth is that you know, we don't know. And being in the moment is just a wonderful way to live, even if we live for 80 years. It's just what it's this precious simplicity. So you come to Sesshin with agendas and goals, and by day two it's just let me get through the next sit. And nobody likes to be in pain, of course, right? Pain has a quality, right, of really focusing the mind. You know, we can have all kinds of idealizations and all kinds of fancy notions and all kinds of concepts and theories, but when we're in pain, it just cuts through all the bullshit, doesn't it? It just cuts through. And it's just everything, it's just getting through the next breath, you know, and all you have to do is get through the next breath. You don't even have to get through 25 minutes. You just have to get through this breath, and this breath, and this breath, and that's all you have to do. If you try to calculate, you know, how far you are into the 25 minutes, that's like a fatal strategy. Big mistake, right? You just have to say, I'm going to take it one breath at a time. And so every once in a while, in the middle of a sit, it's like you've crossed a bridge. You're crossing a log over a torrential stream, right? And about halfway through the sit, you think, oh my God, you know, is it halfway through? Is it? And don't look down. Just want to take the next breath, the next breath, the next breath. It's possible to complicate even that, right? You can get depressed, or you can get fearful, or you can get angry, but those are all just perspectives or views on the moment. And probably with pain knocking at your door, you can't hold on to them for very long. So it's like back to the breath, back to the, for dear life. So nobody likes being in that situation, but it has this incredible purifying effect. It's like getting a death sentence, right? So you're sitting on the cushion and you're saying, I just want to get through the next breath, next breath, next breath. Then the bell rings and it's like, oh my God, the bell. What a beautiful sound, right? And suddenly, you know, you get up to go to the bathroom and you might just notice that the sunlight is falling on the ground. You know, you see a leaf, and your heart can be so tender. Isn't it sometimes the case? It's so tender. It's like everything seems so beautiful, and you're so open. And then you come in and you have a bowl of rice and some vegetable, and it just, it's like, oh, this is, you know, how precious. You know, it's just, that's the way food must taste, I think, to somebody who's condemned, who's on death row, you know, except maybe they're very coarse, you know, but if you're an innocent person and you've, you know, been a fairly decent human being and you're, say, sentenced to death, that's how it must taste, you know, your last meal. It's just like, how precious. I hope you won't, well, I actually, a book that had a big impact on me was War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. And Tolstoy has a scene in there, in the book, where his hero, Prince Bezukhov, is fleeing Moscow as Napoleon invades. And he's basically living like a peasant. And this guy was one of the richest men in Russia. His father, he was an illegitimate son of a Bill Gates type guy. And this huge fortune was settled on him, and he promptly, you know, blew it all away trying to impress other people and find happiness and so on, and was abjectly miserable. And so they have to flee the city, and he's living with a bunch of peasants, and they're eating, you know, food that he said, this is what I used to feed the horses on my estate, you know, and it's so delicious. You know, getting up in the cold without a coat, desperately trying to survive, you find some oats and you boil some oats, and you put them in your mouth, and you just think, oh my God, this is heaven. And it's how precious. This is food he wouldn't have, maybe wouldn't even have fed to his horse. You know, so there's something about sashin which is so wonderful, because it gives us, it takes us, I think, back to the fundamentals, the fundamentals. You know, just breathing, sunlight, you know, warmth, rice. So beautiful, that kind of simplicity. So I hope you're having a little taste of this. It's possible to get there, and if you just keep going, you'll get there. This beautiful simplicity is like, I can't praise it highly enough. Just the fact of being alive. You know, my mother has Alzheimer's disease. And it's progressing rather rapidly. And it's interesting to see how much of her life has gone away. So, for example, she can't really remember my father's sister anymore. And that's fascinating. It's like, finally, everything you have is going to go away. You know, everything you are, you know, going to go. She's increasingly just in a kind inner moment, right? And it's hard to say if she's really impoverished or not, you know. I hope nobody here has Alzheimer's, but actually if that happens, that's Buddha too, you know. And in fact, she can be quite happy sometime. So and this beautiful simplicity is something we've worked hard now to achieve. And you may not be there yet, however, because you know, we have karma. You know, alas, we have created mental habits that we bring to the sashin. And as we work, sit on the cushion and watch our breath, we feel various things. You know, one of the things we might feel is anger, and this happens to people. When you're in pain, some people become very angry, you know, and that anger can even be directed against me, you know, as I know from experience. I mean, I'm the guy that is holding the bell, right? Under other circumstances, it would be better to have somebody else hold the bell. In most Zen temples, there's a person who rings the bell, and there's the person who is the teacher. And those jobs are separated so that people can hate the guy with the bell and not be confused about the teacher. And so we always used to have what's called a jiki jitsu, a timekeeper. And so the timekeeper was indeed, somebody admired and hated sometime, right? Because you'd think, that bastard, you know, he made us sit there for 40 minutes this morning. You know, I'd like to kill him. but we wouldn't think that about Genki Roshi. We'd think, and he would even sort of, they'd sort of do a good cop, bad cop routine, you know. I wondered sometime, Genki would say, let's not make this sit too long. I wondered if secretly he had told me, now make it 45 minutes. Okay? I don't know. But, you know, sometimes people would go into Dokusan, I think, and I would, and complain, you know, and say, well, I know that Jiki Jitsu, he's tough. You know? So maybe we need a Jiki Jitsu to take the heat. Generally, the sits are 25 minutes. If you feel anger, I don't take it personally, but it is something you need to work through, right? Another kind of emotion is self-loathing, right? People can have very fragile confidence in their own abilities. And so on the cushion, people can get very down on themselves, very depressed about their capacity to wake up. Other emotions are, there's just a whole range of emotions, right, that you can bring to the breath. And all of us have these habits, that we've picked up in our lives. And they can be very gripping as we're sitting on the cushion. You can feel very strongly, like real anger, real resentment. Or you can feel, real despair. Right? I just feel so in such a dark mood, I'll never get through this. Now, one of the interesting things that will happen to you if you just keep in the moment is that you'll notice that these moods come and go, right? You, I'm sure, have heard stories about people who were going to commit suicide, and they called the crisis hotline. And these are people who are literally ready to blow out their brains or poison themselves or jump off a building. So it's pretty desperate, right? So unhappy. And then, they call the crisis hotline, and 2 days later, somebody shows up and says, don't jump off the building, please, I care about you, etc. 2 days later, they say, oh, thank God I didn't kill myself. I'm so happy. I'm just so glad I didn't kill myself. So this is a basic human reality that we're not always aware of fully. Our ideas are not really ours. Our ideas are not really ours. We borrowed them. Other people gave them to us. We borrowed them. And actually, emotions are not really ours either. We tend to think of our emotions as the real truth of ourselves, right? So, if we feel despair, we think, oh, this is my real self, this despair. But, half an hour later, you can be ecstatically happy. This, if you practice long enough, you'll notice during one sit, you're at the bottom of the trough, and you're thinking, this is the end. And then, next sit, you come in, you sit down on the cushion, boom. It's like, oh, I'm so glad I came to sesshin. So it's very important not to put too much stock in what's going through your head at any particular time. They're just transient emotions. And that's related to your karma. That's your past. That's the baggage of your past. So eventually what happens is you can see your emotional states and not hold on to them. And that's a very precious moment, when you can suddenly see your anger arising and not become angry. Or when you can suddenly see yourself, you can see despair arising, but you don't despair, you just see it. This is a really wonderful moment. Also, what might happen to you on the cushion as you're trying to watch your breath is that you begin to open the storehouse mind. All of this stuff starts coming out. And people can get very frustrated about this. You sit on the cushion. Day one of Sesshin, you often have a lot of petty details in your mind from your life. So you might think, oh, I forgot to pay that bill, or I wonder if I'll hear from so-and-so. By day two, your mind starts clarifying, but then there's this other thing that starts happening where you begin to have all of this stuff coming up to your consciousness from your past. So you'll remember things that are 20 years old, right? And they might be distant memories, things that you have buried for years and years. In fact, this still happens. Last night, I remembered something I had forgotten about for about 50 years, or not quite, maybe 47 years. My mother used to make roast beef, you know. In fact, she loved to make roast beef. This was before I was a vegetarian, I would say, five or something. And my mother used to put these roasts, she'd cook them and we'd have them for dinner, and then she'd put them in the refrigerator. And they'd just sit there and decay for a week, right? And the way she cooked it, the outside of the roast would be sort of darkened. And there'd be like the last part of the roast beef, there's sort of, you know, it's the outside of the roast as it cooks. And I remember these roasts used to be tied up with butcher's string and baked in the oven with butcher's string. And I used to love to eat the rump end of the roast, that was this sort of darkened piece of meat. And as I ate it, I thought, God, that tasted so delicious. You know, I'll never go back to eating meat, but I thought, wow, I'd forgotten about that for almost 50 years. And I just popped it. So this is naturally going to happen to you. As you begin to enter the deeper levels of your consciousness, all of this stuff comes up to the surface. And some of it, really all of it, has a kind of a karmic significance. Some of it may be as trivial as, you know, I used to love to eat roast beef. And some of it may be events in your life, things you did that you're not proud of, or things that were terrifying to you, or painful, or difficult. And when this happens, please don't engage in contemplation, okay, or analysis. Zen is not meditation is not contemplation. See, so contemplation means you remember something. And then you turn it over in your mind and you try to come to terms with the event. So you're trying to make sense of something that happened to you and get a resolution. So you might think, why did my father, you know, why didn't he ever take me to the ball game? Now, we lived in Baltimore. The Baltimore Orioles were playing. Everybody's father went with my friends. All their fathers went. My dad would never take me to the ball. Why? You know, and I could sit there for hours and think, why did... It's unknowable. So the Zen path is not to contemplate, and it's not to analyze. When these sort of events arise in consciousness, you just keep coming back to the breath, back to the breath, back to the breath. And little by little, you will just notice that they go away. And believe it or not, eventually they'll go away and they'll never, they might come back, but they'll no longer have any kind of emotional power or force. And this is how we liberate ourselves in the Zen tradition. It seems so simple, but it's just letting it go, letting it go. And if you've made a mistake in your life, you know, just note the mistake and move on. You don't have to beat yourself up. So this is all of this. These are sort of obstacles to being fully in the moment, fully in the moment. And you know, each time you are in the moment, and you go to the next moment, and you go to the next moment, and you go to the next moment, something interesting is happening to you. This is like so purifying. So you're sitting on the cushion, and you're trying to get through 25 minutes, and you're watching your breath for dear life, and you think, I'll never do it, and I'm in the next breath. Okay, I can do one more. Next breath. I can do one more. Next breath. You know, little by little, believe it or not, believe it or not, you're building a kind of trust in your true nature. This is like, you know, we think we can't do it. You know, so many people go through this experience where they're moving, and you know, when you come to Sesshin, a lot of the time it's hard to sit still for 25 minutes over and over again. And people will move around and move around and move around, and I did too. But one day you sit there and you think, all right, I'm not going to move. Damn it, I'm not going to move. And you, it's like going out on a high wire, right, and wondering if you're going to fall off. And sometimes you just do. You go, oh my God, I can't do it, and you move. But eventually, you get out there and you realize, okay, all I have to do is the next step, the next breath, the next breath. And then, blissfully, right? Sweetest sound in the world. And this is like building. This is like a building elemental trust in your true nature. I'll never forget the first time I sat through two sits as a sesshin. In fact, I might have gone through three. But, you know, I've been practicing for many years, and we were having a summer sesshin at our temple, which we were building up in the mountains, Tokuganji. And at that time, there were no windows in the zendo. And so we were just, it was summer, it was beautiful. And I remember sitting across from Genki Roshi and Webb Sensei. And the bell rang, ending the first sit. And it occurred to me that I didn't have to break. I could try to go to the next sit. And it was like, do I dare? And do I dare? But I had been through many, you know, breaths, millions of breaths, right? Where I went out on a limb and I got to the other side. I went out on the rope and I got to the other side. This is like building elemental, so simple, but it's building elemental trust. Elemental trust. We're always afraid that life is going to betray us. We're going to be destroyed, right, somehow. This is like, must be hardwired, right? And so you sit on the cushion and you get through the breath, and you get through the breath, and you get. Eventually, you get through the whole 25 minutes without moving. And you're building like elemental trust in the whole world, actually. In the whole world. And also in your true nature. Because when you're sitting on the cushion and you're worried and you're in pain, right? You can't really be in your small self too much, or you'll just go down in flames. You really have to enter that thoughtless state. You have to. And you get in that thoughtless state, and you suddenly have the power, you have the ability to get through 25 minutes. And the more time you spend in that state, the more you learn how to trust it. And the more you realize you can do, and you know, that day, I'll never forget that day where, you know, the bell rang, and I looked over at Webb and Genki, and they weren't moving. And I just thought, I'll give it a try. And I learned to trust my true self. Really, that's what it's all, so much of this is really about trust, about trusting your true self. And also about being able to empty yourself out. With the Mu practice also, you know, people can work on the Mu practice for years and years. You can work on Mu for years and think, you know, I go into the Dokusan room and I call Mu, 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 and nothing ever happens. Or I'm trying to call Mu, but I just, it's all about trust, right? You know, all you have to do is let go and allow Mu to call Mu. Allow Mu to call Mu. You don't have to do the work, you just have to show up. Right? You're like the vehicle for this beautiful life energy. And so sooner or later, people get out of the way, they trust enough and to get out of the way. And then, you know, anything can happen, and whatever happens is the voice of the Buddha, is the voice of the universe. Takes time. One breath at a time, we build that kind of trust. So what about this koan? I have like 2 minutes. Bodhidharma, it was the great Indian meditation master who brought Chan, or Zen, to China. And his portrait will appear, or statue, is probably present in almost every temple in China and Taiwan and Japan, for that matter. Every Buddhist temple probably has somewhere a statue or a representation of Dhammo, of Dharuma. And this statue clearly shows a man who some would call chubby, you know, and bald head, and beard, and a devilishly a mischievous look sometimes, or fierce look, right? This is our founder, right? This is I should have a little sense. It's our founder, right? And great, if you ever read anything he wrote, he's just absolutely fantastic, amazing person. There's some of his texts have survived, and they're really like mind-blowing texts. So everybody in Bodhidharma, in Zen, in the Zen world, knows who Bodhidharma is, and it always shows this guy who's a full face, round, features, and beard, no hair, and usually an earring in his ear. I don't know what that meant. So Bodhidharma is a familiar figure all over Zen world, and Chinese Buddhist world, and Japanese Buddhist world. So the koan says, the Western barbarian, in other words, Bodhidharma, the Western barbarian has no beard. Right? So all representations of Bodhidharma show him with a beard. See? And the koan says, why does the Western barbarian have no beard? So this is like the classic cognitive dissonance is what psychologists everybody who knows anything about Zen knows Bodhidharma has a beard. All the authorities say he has a beard. And the koan is saying, why does he have no beard? So this is called don't listen to others, be in the moment. Be in the moment. And you, if you're working on the koan, you could say, but he has a beard. You know, everybody says he has. No, no, just be in the moment. You know, don't listen to what everybody says. You know, what do you know? You know, the koan is, basically this koan is working like a lot of other koans. It's really saying, look, enter deep mushi. Enter empty mind. Deep mushi. Okay? And then I'm going to give you a little cue, a little subconscious cue, and I want you to notice something about the moment. Okay? So hot water, cold water is saying enter mu, and then notice something about the moment. It's something about the moment, and it's like hot water and cold water. Now, the koan's not about hot water and cold water. That's the cue. It's about some aspect of the moment. So look. See, no beard is another koan. It's giving you a cue. It's saying something about the moment is different from expectations, right? Something about the moment is different from. And you can say, but everybody knows he has. No. Forget everybody knows. In the simplicity of this moment, what do you see? In the simplicity of this moment, what do you see? And it's very hard because we don't trust. So the Sesshin is like building trust one breath at a time. And you're sitting there in agony sometimes, and you're thinking, just next breath. But every time you aren't destroyed, see, you're learning. It's like a wonderful discovery. You know, that this life is really marvelous. And this life energy flowing through your molecules is infinitely precious. And so you go through this process again and again, coming up to like the precipice, right? Precipice. And thinking, I'm going to fall, I'm going to drop, I'm going to go off the rope, you know. But you don't. You don't. And if you do, you don't fall to your death. You just put your leg down on the cushion and you try again, right? You know, it's not the... But one day you get all the way across the rope and you say, my gosh, how did I do that? It's learning to tap into this other mind, this big mind. You know? And it's all so much about trust. We just don't believe we can do it, you know. But it's one breath at a time. Change your trust grows one breath at a time. So don't assume. Of course, we all do. You know, people given the breath koan and told watch the breath. People think, oh God, you know, come on, give me a real koan. I actually thought that way. When Genki Roshi gave me that koan, I thought, come on, I'm give me a real koan. Give me something mystical, you know. Give me something, the stuff where I get to levitate. You know? And I just thought, well, I'm watching the breath. What do you want from me? The breath is amazing, right? And breath is beyond words, indescribable. It's the vehicle that takes us to the door of liberation. And the breath is totally different from what we think sometimes. So I sat with the breath for 5 years, and I just didn't trust enough to simply be in the moment with my breath. You know, I was so frightened of not being able to control the situation. And that, by the way, is the source of so much pain, physical, real physical pain. But also a source of so much psychological pain. You know, people sit on the cushion and sometimes they're working with their koan and they start calculating. They go, oh my God, you know, I've been working on this cushion, this sesshin, pardon me, I've been working on this koan for, how many sashimis now? Oh my God, has it been three? Oh, I'm losing my grip. You know, or I'll never answer this damn thing. You know, I'll be old. I'll never have enlightenment. You know, this is like, back to the breath. You know, one of these days, you just realize this is all bullshit. You know, this is all bullshit. Just be in the moment. None of this matters. It's tomorrow. One sit, you think, it's the end of the world. I'll never enter my koan. This is hell. I hate it. Come back, the next sit, you think, this Zen is so wonderful. I'm so glad I came. These are just views. They're just transient perspectives. So, you know, just don't hang on to them. Be in the moment. Be in the moment. Wakuan said, why does the Western barbarian have no beard? Mumon's comment, study should be real study, enlightenment should be real enlightenment. In other words, not what people say, what you experience. You should once meet this barbarian directly to be really intimate with him. Be intimate with this moment. Say, to hell with what people say, or what should happen. You know, the Zen perspective is all the answers, you've got a question, the answer's in the moment. People think, there's no way, no way, life is not, no. See, that's lack of trust. You've got everything you need to know is in the moment. You know, that's the, if you don't believe me, just keep sitting. So, you should meet this barbarian directly to be really intimate with him. But saying you are really intimate with him already divides you into two. That's just a view, just a view. Mumon's verse, don't discuss your dream before a fool. Barbarian with no beard obscures the clarity. And clarity is overrated, as a matter of fact. Clarity is nice, but there are many different, the moment can take many different forms, clarity and unclarity. Right? So whatever the next moment brings is Buddha. So let's see what the next moment brings.